Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us in the first half of the show today is Katie Wang from the Park City Film Series. And she is going to talk about the film Bugs with us. And I guess taking off my radio co-host hat and putting on my Swanner ED hat, I can say that we are hosting this film together. We're excited to bring it in. So give us the overview on this film Bugs, Katie.
Sure. So this is a new documentary. Oh.
Go.
So this is a new documentary about insect cuisine. And as you mentioned in the intro, the Nordic Food Lab out of Copenhagen is an offshoot of Noma, which is kind of has been rated one of the world's best restaurants. Rene Redzepi, who is the executive chef there, is really looking at food from a point of deliciousness, right? How do you get new flavors in, right?
Seems like a great way to look at food.
This is why he's good at what he does, right? But if you look at kind of how food is eaten around the world, what are the different flavors one can incorporate? He certainly started with Nordic food, recipes that people didn't know, looking at everything from seagrass to fishes that have been fermented for, you know, years, right? Mm. And so insects are something that they started looking at because, as you mentioned, you know, 2 billion people around the world are eating insects. If you go down to Mexico, escamoles, delicious, they're ant larvae, right? You can eat toasted crickets down in Oaxaca. So you can go around the world and see this, and it's, well, why isn't it that we eat it as much in the Western world? And are they as delicious, or really is it something that's just kind of as a means to get by, right? You know, certainly you hear about people, you know, in desperate times eating everything from tree bark to insects.
Sure.
But is there kind of a deliciousness component? Can it be part of some of the cuisine? And certainly it can. And so that's kind of the perspective that he comes at, this kind of issue from. And if you ever watch food films or food shows, you know, there is that element in the movie, which I love, that it's, you know, there's this kind of explorer just kind of joy of eating and going around and talking to people about what is the queen termite, you know, what does that taste like? It's delicious. Okay. And then they kind of liken it to other flavors that they know, as one does, and really get into what are the cultures that are behind eating some of these insects and how did that come to be? And so it's in part kind of foodie cooking show aspect, kind of lighthearted, but also there's a serious issue of in 2050, the UN has estimated that we'll have 9 billion people on this planet. How are we going to feed them all, right? If we use our traditional sources of protein that we have now, beef, chickens, pigs, whatever, we already know that's not sustainable. So if we scale that up, how do we try to lessen that impact, make it more sustainable? Protein certainly is an important part of anyone's diet. It doesn't have to be from meat, certainly, but the meat component of that is there. Are insects part of that mix? They already are. Should it be more? And that's really kind of the question they're trying to answer in the movie. And so I thought that was really interesting when we were talking with Swanner about bringing in a film for Earth Month, as we have done for years now. How can we bring in another issue that addresses environmental sustainability and, you know, addresses our impact as humans on the environment in a way that we haven't already talked about before? And so we thought that Bugs would be kind of a fun way to do it, but also, you know, with a serious component to it, that this is a real issue.
Absolutely. I remember years and years ago, a publisher sent Chris and me a book that was about eating insects. It was like a recipe book. It was.
Yeah.
And it talked about sustainability. It was motivated, I would say, by sustainability. And it was the first we'd really seen of this, like of this conversation here. And I do feel like maybe it's becoming a little more widespread. We're hearing about the benefits to the environment of eating insects. We're hearing a little bit about people doing cool culinary things with them. But I think that the conversation is increasing. And I do have to say we are excited to show a film that's just – it's a little different from what we usually watch when we think about how can we decrease our carbon footprint or, you know, what's happening with global warming. Most environmental documentaries are a little bit different than this. And so we're excited to do something that's kind of fun and will maybe bring a different solution in front of us.
So is there a common insect that most cultures eat? I mean, or the top three most common – types of insects that we consume?
Yeah, there are 2,037 documented edible insects.
2,000? Okay.
37.
Don't forget that 37.
Yeah, yes, right. 37. Don't forget that seventh one of the 37. But when you look at what's really been cultivated in this country, and certainly in the movie they talk about all different types, you know, different stages of the insect's life, you know, whether it's the queen or it's a larvae. So different stages certainly matter. But what we've seen are – when I'm kind of doing research for this, you know, crickets, mealworms, and grasshoppers are what's become kind of more generally popular in the United States and in kind of the Western world, because they are high in protein, fat, and essential amino acids. So you're seeing it more kind of incorporated as like a protein powder type thing, or in protein kind of power bar type things.
So as an ingredient, not as necessarily
as a cuisine,
as a whole on a plate.
So that's kind of what we're seeing kind of a little bit more commercialized, the kind of the mass production side of insect cuisine. Those are the ones that we're seeing kind of generally more popular. And certainly, as you'll see in the movie, some of the insects that they're eating, these honeybees, you know, they're really hard to find. You know, they're not, and there is that conversation certainly of, you don't want to eat this animal to extinction.
Sure. Right?
We've already done that.
There are the same issues, some of the same issues with insects that there are with other species.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You tread carefully, you know, as with anything, that we feel like they're so abundant, but we thought the same thing about the carrier pigeon. Right.
So, right. And look where we are now.
And look where we are now. None.
So we should mention that also at the screening, we're going to have some local product that is made with this flour made out of crickets. We're going to have chipotle bars available for tasting. So
if you come
to the film,
these are
protein bars that are made. It's a Salt Lake City business.
Oh.
And we're trying to look at an alternative for a protein source. And they came upon this sustainable source of crickets. And so here we are.
And so these are are these are locally grown crickets or?
You know, I don't know the answer to that.
Or Jamaican crickets?
We were just chatting about that before the show.
I think that's what they are. I believe, when I recall.
I can ask the internet.
It's been years.
Okay, you ask the internet,
but I believe they're a flour based from Jamaican crickets, and they turned this into a protein bar with lots of other ingredients, which makes it palatable.
And they're not just, and even the producer is not just Chapul, but others who are making similar kind of mixes. I mean, if you ever have tasted protein powder, you know, by itself, it doesn't taste delicious.
No.
But you mix it with other ingredients, and it's not pure crickets, right? There's other stuff in there. But really, when you come at it from kind of the athletic perspective that apparently cricket flour has, and the proteins that are in crickets are, you know, help with recovery and are good for muscle growth. And so it has all these other components other than just being kind of tasty and, you know, satiating your hunger. So there is that component of it actually is a good recovery protein, which is kind of interesting to think about it that way. And you're eating the entire cricket. And that's the other thing that when people talk about insect cuisine and using it more on a mass scale to feed people, there's no bits and pieces left over, right? You don't have the equivalent of offal that you have to maybe make into something else or consider, oh, what do we do with the byproducts of beef? You're eating the entire insect. There is no byproduct. It is the meal, right?
Okay.
You grind it up. Certainly it's, you know, wings, legs, all of that go into it. It's not pieced out. And so in that sense, when you talk about the sustainability of it, there's certainly a lower impact on, you know, you don't have to use as much land. There's less water that's need to be used to grow it. And there is no, you know, byproduct of it. You're not throwing bits away. There's no waste in that sense. So, which is interesting.
They also have I've read like a really high protein conversion rate, especially in compared to things like beef and pork. So again, the sustainability piece comes in.
That's a good point. They probably don't consume as much water either as the water that goes into a pound of beef and meat. So where are some of the locales that this, this film, you know, takes us?
So they take you to Australia, and you know, they are engaging with an Aboriginal woman and eating some grubs there. Mexico with the Eskimoles and crickets. Kenya, where they have grasshoppers and some other insects there. And then in Japan as well, where they're actually harvesting these very dangerous bees. And you had it's a very funny scene where they're trying to get them. They're like, don't let it sting you because you will die. And you're like, in your bee suit trying to get them into this container to eat them. So it's, not all of them are kind of, you know, little bugs that you can pick up, and it's a little more dangerous, kind of more of the hunter aspect of it, I suppose.
Okay. A little bit of a risk involved.
A little bit of a risk involved, exactly.
And I think it's important that we focus or remind ourselves that the best type of bug to eat is a local bug, right? Because it's one thing for us to say, hey, I eat these bees from
these
Australia,
exotic bees
but
from
of course
Japan,
they're shipped here by, you know, Amazon or FedEx across the. No, that's not the idea here.
Right,
is to try to learn how to consume insects or that type that are local. Might there be any local grasshoppers or mealworms or other types of insects that that we could think about consuming on a local basis? That seems to be the ultimately
well,
no,
so it could
the
be
question.
Grown locally, certainly,
right. Or farmed,
or farmed. Right?
So
I mean,
there
that's
are
something that,
there is farming operations.
There's definitely farming. That's something that they do talk about in the movie. And I think what I like about the Nordic Food Lab is they're coming at it from certainly this culinary perspective, but also an environmental and kind of more academic perspective.
Yeah.
One of the researchers has a graduate degree from Yale, and so he's presenting this whole paper, academic paper, to the UN, to the FAO. And, you know, he's looking at, you know, what are the impacts? Yes, this could potentially be a way to feed the 9 billion people in 2050, but is that there is that slippery slope aspect of it, right? If you invest too heavily in one product, do you end up creating the same problems that we have now, right? You're now farming it. Are you losing some deliciousness by having it be farmed and not just like anything, right? If you eat cheese that's from a cow that's eating fresh grass, that will taste certainly different.
Yeah.
That cheese will have a certain deliciousness factor to it that a cow that's eating dried up grass won't have. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing, as it turns out, with insects, that they will taste differently based on where they have been raised. And so the locavore aspect comes in. And that's what I like about the movie, is that it's not just sensationalizing. Oh, people eat bugs. Maybe we can do it too. It's like, no, this is, you know, it's a serious conversation of, yes, people do eat it, and they eat it because it's easy nutrition, and it's part of their culture. And certainly when they meet with the people in Kenya, they kind of are, you know, critical of why they're there, why the Nordic Food Lab is coming to Kenya, and say, well, why are you asking us these questions? And they said, you know, we're coming as chefs. And so they say, you know, what we're seeing in Kenya is we have this high rate of obesity and diabetes now because of the Western diet that's been introduced here. And so now we're seeing Kenyans go back to reverting back to our traditional diet, which did include more bugs and bug protein, because it's more, you know, it's better for us. It turns out that this was more sustainable from just a health perspective than introducing McDonald's burgers and, you know, whatever else is coming in, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Katie Wang. She's the executive director of Park City Film Series. We're talking about a film they're going to be showing in cooperation with Swanner Eco Center this Wednesday. It's called Bugs, a documentary about one restaurant or food.
Nordic Food Lab.
Nordic Food Lab's efforts to explore the opportunities for more of us, more of our world, to consume insects on some level, and what that looks like, what the insects look like, the types and the values of that. Environmental, health values, benefits of that. So, okay, so that's, you know, we also talked about, you know, I have to be careful. You talk about the environmental impacts. There's the potential impacts of introducing, let's say, bugs to an area, a farming operation. Somebody says, I'm going to raise Jamaican crickets in here, you know, in Utah. Well, there could be unintended consequences.
Right.
So that,
and
again,
certainly the interest, and I think the perspective of the film, which, you know, again, I appreciate, is, you know, look locally. There are insects here. There is nowhere in the world that does not have insects. Probably maybe not Antarctica. But, you know, even then, maybe under the snow.
Yet.
Never know.
Yet.
Yes, right. Yet. As it gets warmer,
it's only a matter of time.
There will be more. But looking locally, what is your local environment? What is it that you're putting in your body? How is it going to be better for you, for your community, for your environment? And that's true of any foods, and certainly insects can be part of that mix. And that's kind of what we're seeing, which I think is exciting to think about, of how can we increase that mix? All of us are trying to be better, healthier, stronger, faster, all these different things. Maybe veganism isn't the way you want to go, right, and have no animal-based protein. But if you're trying to reduce your impact on the environment and want to get beef out of the mix, right, maybe insect protein is the way to go. And, you know, you have this kind of squeamishness factor of eating insects, and certainly they play that up in the trailer for the film. But then you think about some foods that we already eat. I mean, foie gras, right? You know,
sure.
Eating
there
brain,
are lots of exotic
you know,
foods
breads.
That we consume.
I mean, there are
consume.
So many foods that we consume that if you thought about it a little harder, you'd be like, well, you know, that was kind of odd.
Different
like, whoever
organs.
Thought about eating
right.
brain
right.
versus eating, you know, a mealworm? You know, why is that any different?
Right. Why it's is just one animal essentially a different
why? Why is that acceptable versus something that's like a cricket? And, you know, if it tastes delicious, then, you know, why not eat it?
Right. So I have to mention that at our last traveling exhibit at the Eco Center, it was called Small Wonders, and it was about bugs. And one of the sections was about entomophagy, or eating bugs. And so we decided to have samples of different flavored crickets for people to eat when they came in and got their ticket. And so we had barbecue flavored. We had chocolate covered. We had sriracha. We had plain. Anyway, and it was really interesting to see people's reactions. As a staff, we all tasted them together. And it really is just like a crunchy little like salty snack. You know, it is like could be in a Whole Foods.
It's more about the barbecue mix, you know, flavor. But, at some point, it becomes more about
the flavor that's on
flavoring
it,
yeah. That's added to it.
But it was so interesting seeing people's reactions. I think most kids kind of looked to their parents to see what the parents' reactions were. And if the parents thought, like, all right, let's go for it, let's do it, then the kids were all in. Hmm. And, of course, if the opposite was the case, then, you know, the kids weren't as interested in trying them. And I would say maybe half the people didn't even really want to taste them and didn't want to go there because of that
barrier
factor. Because, again, this is not a flower or something. It's very clearly
right, it's the entire body of the cricket.
The entire body of the cricket.
But if you think about it, you grow your own food.
Exactly.
And who hasn't had the homegrown lettuce, you know, salad right. where suddenly there's a little bit more protein in there than you
anticipated.
Right. Okay, but that's the that's the social psychological barrier that has to be crossed. And I've said this before, like in our Western culture, if you barbecue or deep fry anything, most Americans will eat it, you know?
Or
you
covered in sugar. Chocolate, it turns out. The chocolate-covered crickets were
quite popular.
Far
so
and
say, what
away
was the most
favorite.
Popular chocolate.
There,
there was a vote, and yeah, the chocolate won by a landslide.
Okay. You start with them as a dessert.
That's right. We're getting used to it.
Right, as sprinkles on your ice cream. So, okay, so you add sugar, salt, and fat to it, and people eat it. But that's not the point here. But that's what we would probably have to do in our culture.
But if you have it as an ingredient, right? I mean, it's not necessarily that you were eating, and I'll just go back to worms because that I think has the highest squeamish factorness to it. But you're not talking about pulling a worm out of the ground and popping it. We're not birds, right?
Exactly.
There's a lot of foods that we would not be able to eat if we didn't cook them, right? Because either they're poisonous or they don't, you know, a yam out of the ground doesn't taste very good raw, right? But cooked, it can be delicious. And mixing it with other flavors, it becomes a flavor, it becomes a protein, an additive. Added into the mix of what we're already eating, and then if it's more sustainable, then you know hopefully maybe it's something that we should really consider seriously as an addition to the Western diet, and not just keep going back to the same old the trough of we know we like beef, we like pork, and maybe we could just make that more delicious and add more things. It's like maybe adding bugs in there that will lessen the environmental impact of those larger animals. Maybe that's what the future looks like. And we don't know. I mean, it doesn't end with, and here's the title card with go here and become bug activist. It's really thought-provoking, and it doesn't really end with, let's wrap it all up and this is the way we want you to go. Conclusion's done, and here's our final message. It is really what I appreciate is that it is very thought-provoking and kind of takes you in these different directions and leaves you to your own conclusions.
I have to say, it looks like they're doing some very impressive things with these bugs as they cook and prepare them. So I will be curious to see the full film.
We eat marine-based bugs, right? We eat shrimp.
Right.
We eat, the same person that probably loves raw oysters and clams and mussels probably would
be
horrified.
These are excellent points. But, yes. Yeah.
So, again, it's just switching our minds, changing our mindset. There are people down in the Keys who will never eat lobster because they – you know why? Because they call them bugs. They're considered bugs to them. So it's all about what's going on in our heads. And the cuisine, I guess, insects are seen as kind of something not very aspirational. We aspired to raising ourselves out of eating insects. And now we're asking to go back and reconsider
that. Why is that? Right. Is it better for us and the planet to go back to a more fundamental level? Not that it has to be something that's deprivation based.
The answer is it is. it's a necessary thing. So here's my idea.
That you're not sacrificing anything by diversifying your diet.
You're right.
That you are not, it's not that you are sitting in the dark and cold and eating bugs out of the ground. You're just adding it in to delicious foods that you're already eating.
So the next event, you have local-based insects paired with a salad made of non-native weeds. and local weeds, Canadian thistle.
Thistle teas. And delicious.
Exactly.
I'll make a garlic mustard pesto.
Garlic mustard. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be
all right. Kate, what's the details again, Kate?
So the details, it's Wednesday, this Wednesday at 7 o'clock. It's a free screening. If you come a little early, you can get a Chipool bar tasting.
That's right.
With cricket flour. We'll have some different flavors there. We want to thank the Promontory Foundation for their support. We get grants from them to support the Real Community Series, of which this is a part. So thank them for their partner support. And then Swanner Preserve and Eco Center for their partnership. We've worked with them for many years to present films that are provocative during Earth Month. And get people to think about our environment and how we live within it. So it's been really exciting, and we're excited to have Bugs on Wednesday. But parkcityfilmseries.org if you want to check out the trailer, and then come on over to the third floor of the library building.
Family-friendly?
Family-friendly, yes.
Absolutely.
As always.
Absolutely.
Katie Wang, executive director of the Park City Film Series, the film Bugs this Wednesday. Join us there.
Free.
Free at best.
Free. Yes. We should have emphasized that.
Free.
Yeah.
Yes. There's no barrier to entry. And you can get some protein.
That's what I'm looking for.
Good snack on the way in.
Good snack on the way in. Exactly.
We'll see you then. Thanks again for joining us, Katie.
Thank you.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be speaking with Bill Wilson. He's the founder and CEO of Sustain 3, all about sustainability in your business. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
A longtime supporter of KPCW, Jan's Mountain Outfitters sells and rents mountain bikes and road bikes. Our bike shop provides bike fitting, parts, tunes, and repair service. Jan's Fly Shop is stocked with fishing gear and offers guided fishing excursions and lessons, serving Park City for over 30 years. 649-4949 or jans.com.
Hi, this is Whitney Ryan from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
Hi, this is Bill Rock. The Vail Epic Promise Foundation, a nonprofit organization, is a proud supporter of KPCW. The foundation provides Park City Mountain employees with grants in emergencies and for educational purposes. Information is available to Park City Mountain employees at epicpromise.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on the environment and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And speaking of concepts of sustainability, joining us in the second part of the show is Bill Wilson. He's the founder and CEO of Sustain 3, a sustainability consulting firm. Well, I'll take a guess there. And we'll start with that, Bill. Give us a little thumbnail sketch of what Sustain 3 is about.
Well, sure, and thanks for having me on the show. So Sustain 3 was developed for organizations who are trying to integrate sustainability into their core business strategies and understand that it's important to have an engaged workforce to really make that happen. So we developed an online training and engagement portal for these organizations so they can consistently engage their employees on what's important to them from a sustainability standpoint and how that aligns with their business priorities.
All right, so let's talk about examples of sustainability. What does that include?
So anything from energy conservation, water conservation, transportation, waste, supply chain, responsible sourcing.
That's a good one. I always like that, responsible sourcing, because that can be – it's really a lot about what comes in your front door or your back door as far as your raw material for a business.
Right. And our our approach is really to highlight the business case for sustainability. We really start with the economics.
Mm-hmm.
Environmental piece is obviously very important and a big part of this, but – business owners and leaders really are driven by, profits and bottom line. So we do show that operating sustainably, integrating sustainability into core business strategies will reap the benefits of lower operating costs,
mm-hmm.
The with the millennial workforce, they really are looking for organizations to work for that share their values. So retention and recruitment of top talent is also another benefit. And then brand, people, you know, customers are expecting that the, you know, the businesses that they want to spend money at also share their values and are doing the right thing.
Right. That all things equal, they will, the customers will gravitate towards a business that has an environmentally minded philosophy.
Right. Take Patagonia, for instance. I mean, I think a lot of people, of course, they have very nice gear.
Sure.
But it's very well known that they're doing a lot of good things for the planet. And that means a lot to consumers. And I think that's happening more and more. And even in the investment community, you know, the investment portfolio are looking and they're looking at scorecards of organizations and are they really doing their part? And so it's, you know, it's slow to take hold, but it's happening.
So I have to ask, what motivated you to get into this line of work? Did you come from that business background where you were doing this yourself? Did you see a need in the community?
That's a good question. There was an evolution. I got involved in solar, and then that morphed into residential home energy efficiency work. And that's when it dawned on me that, you know, we can do a lot more. We can reach a lot more people if we go down the path of online software and training, or we can affect more people. So it was an evolution. I always equate it to health and wellness and safety. You know, back in the day, safety was a big deal, and all the organizations began implementing safety programs. Then the next big employee engagement piece was health and wellness. Now there's this big movement for corporate social responsibility, corporate citizenship, and I saw the need that organizations were really struggling to consistently engage their workforce. They would form green teams and do their best, but it was off the side of someone's desk. It wasn't their full-time job. Mm-hmm. So our program is built for busy people. It's a way to just kind of, you know, culture change, behavior change is a journey. It's not an overnight sensation. You
right.
don't cram everyone into a conference room, feed them pizza, and expect them to walk out changed. So our program is very.
It's a good start.
It is a good start. That was really good pizza. What did we talk about?
Can we do that again? No, I hear it. I've done some of that when I was in Florida, and we would approach a potential client, let's say a small town or business, and they one of their responses would be like, "Oh, we already do this. We have a green team in house," and from that, as a result. You know, we print on both sides of the paper and we use soy-based printer and we have a hybrid parking spot out front and we're changing a few lights when we can. So we're all over this. And that was their takeaway is that right. they actually have accomplished what they set out to do. But what they didn't recognize is there's about 23 other things that they could employ or look at too. And so that's what you bring, that body of knowledge into a business to say, no – this is a much larger palette that you can consider.
Yeah, and a lot like workplace safety, you know, it's both for at work and at home, and sustainability is the same way. The content that we publish is relevant both at work and at home. So it's affecting people's lives because we always think, you know, if you're safe at work, you're probably going to be safe at home as well, and same with sustainability and health and wellness. I would say is similar.
So, give us some examples of businesses, organizations you've worked with, and what you've done for them.
Sure. Well, it's been a wide variety. We've worked with the University of Utah, with the City of Salt Lake, some manufacturing firms, some architectural firms, but most recently here in Park City, and what I'd like to talk about today is a pilot we did with the Lululemon store. And the objectives of this pilot program was a six-week pilot. And it was Catherine Shanks and myself. Catherine is a sustainability consultant with a background of like 30 years in sustainability. Mm-hmm. So she brings the analytical side of it. I brought the training portal. But I had a friend named Haley Lebsack who worked at Lululemon. Now she's at Recycle Utah. And she and I talked about doing this pilot, and the objective was to illustrate how sustainability can drive real economic and environmental benefits for businesses, then also show how businesses can help local communities achieve their sustainability goals, which in this town are very aggressive. I hear the most aggressive in the United States, being carbon neutral by 2022,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the city and then the countywide by 2032.
Right.
That's aggressive, and we think it's going to take local businesses to help meet those goals. And then lastly, the third objective was to inspire other businesses and municipalities to consider this approach that we did. And so the material topics that we addressed were sustainability 101, climate change and energy, climate change and transportation, waste, water, supply chain, and responsible sourcing. And it was a six-week pilot.
And that's all with Lululemon, sitting down with their staff or their managers and educating them on this.
Correct. There was about 18 people in that store. And we started off by doing a baseline assessment and a survey. The assessment was to look at what are they doing now, you know, what kind of lighting do they have, what kind of water conservation items are in place. And then we also did a survey to measure attitudes and beliefs around sustainability of the staff. What do they know about what Lululemon's doing? What do they know about what Summit County and Park City are doing?
Right.
And then after the pilot, we surveyed them again and showed the delta on the impacts that we had with their attitudes and beliefs and awareness. And I'll share that with you.
Hold on. Let me reintroduce you. We're speaking with Bill Wilson. He's the founder and CEO of Sustain 3. They're a sustainability consulting firm that provides sustainability strategies, online sustainability strategies, to businesses and nonprofit organizations, municipalities, whoever has an organization. They use energy or water or supply chain. You can help them out.
Absolutely.
So what were some of the other takeaways of the Lululemon group? I mean, you saved them on electricity, natural gas, water.
So we published a scorecard at the conclusion of the pilot, and we measured greenhouse gas reductions. We also had a community service component where the staff was, in this case, they helped plant a bunch of trees off 224, as
good.
Well as helped with a Recycle Utah event at the Recycle Center.
Right.
We measured reductions in single occupancy trips in cars. So in this case, we had 31 car trips or 520 miles of driving avoided by changing behaviors of getting out of their cars and using other forms of transportation to get to work, which, as you all know, is a big deal here.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Reduction in waste to landfill. We had 100% of plastic recycled.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great, because Nell and I are going to talk a little bit about plastics.
We are.
litter and trash and Earth Day. So I'm sorry, but that's great.
Yeah.
But this is a business that already probably – this is Lululemon.
Yeah.
They probably already have an environmental mindset.
Well, that's interesting.
And what's interesting is that you go in there and you add to it.
Yeah, they do. From a corporate standpoint, they have very solid sustainability initiatives. But what's interesting is the rank and file doesn't necessarily know that.
Mm.
I mean, we really brought a lot of awareness to what Lululemon Corporate is doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys are busy. They're there to sell Lululemon, not necessarily understand what their corporate initiatives are. But now they know, and it was eye-opening. And we have a few quotes from them. We also, you know, we made it fun. It was gamified. One of the fun ones were how we saved waters. We had a 7-minute shower challenge. So you may not know it, but in the United States, the average shower time is 8 minutes. So if you cut a minute out, you're saving. And in this case, we extrapolated out with these 18 people. If they did that regularly, we would have saved 12,000 gallons of water.
Right.
you know, and that's a small sample size, but you can imagine if you, you know, if there was 1,000 people or 10,000 people.
And that's a small change in behavior, too.
That's just a small, 1 minute.
It's not going without. It's just going a little less.
Yeah, and being aware that, okay, I can do my part in more ways than, one. And, it was fun. We had other local businesses supporting this pilot with incentives, like Boom Cycle and Rossignol. Mm. We actually had swag that, as if you participated in the program, you had the opportunity to, win that stuff.
Right. Although I'm a anti-swag guy.
Yeah.
I've come because the majority of the time this stuff seems to come from China. It's like little tchotchkes or little things that ultimately have a carbon footprint associated with themselves.
That's true.
So how about a no swag? How about just gratitude? And just say thanks for doing that. I don't need a T-shirt all the time or a coffee mug.
Yeah. Well, this was more like time at Boom.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to say that an experience can be an excellent
incentive.
There was
a facial. There was a spa day.
Great idea.
And then Rossignol gave skis and snowboards. So that was
okay.
That was some collateral or that was some currency that really rung a bell with these folks.
Right.
The other thing I'd like to share is the results of how we increased engagement and awareness. And so we were asking questions like, is sustainability an important part of my personal values? Do I feel I understand my local community's sustainability initiatives and before and after? And the impacts of the pilot were always in the green or positive, that we were increasing their understanding and that they understood more and more about what concrete actions they can take on behalf of Lululemon,
right,
and what they can do personally. But there was a question that we asked at the end of the pilot. And it was, this sustainability training improved my awareness of local community initiatives on sustainability. And 100% of the participants agreed or strongly agreed that happened. And that was a big goal of ours, was so they understood the link between what they're doing and what the community, what Park City and Summit County are trying to do.
Right.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
And it helps them, again, promote their brand. So now they're, I don't know, if they get some type of recognition from Sustain 3 or so, but they can shout that out. And they say they're doing their part for the community-wide efforts.
Right, exactly. So, well, we are talking about certification or recognition. It's in the early stages, but hopefully we'll have another conversation about that, sometime in the next 6 months. But we think that could be a really smart way to engage other businesses and get the critical mass in play and get some excitement. Because again, these climate goals are aggressive and we're running out of time. We need to start acting and it's going to take a collective effort. And that's
that.
And I think this community is ripe to get on it.
Okay. We got to wrap up.
Yeah.
Where do people go to contact you?
Sure. They can contact me at bwilson@sustain3.com or our website. My contact information is there at sustain3.com.
Sustain3.com.
Yeah, the number three.
The number three.
Sustain, number three.
Okay.
And that's the simplest way.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear from other local businesses who are interested in learning more.
All right. Bill Wilson, again, thanks so much for joining us. Mm-hmm. And I hope you get some feedback.
Great.
And we'll have you on again and to get an update in another year or so.
I like it.
That's perfect.
Sounds like a good plan to me. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Let's take a break for a couple of underwriters and sponsors. When we come back, we got some news items. We want to share what we did on Earth Day. Very interesting.
Right.
It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Quarterly Summit Community Power Works reports during This Green Earth is brought to you in part by Rocky Mountain Power. Being energy efficient is good for you and the Wasatch Back. Being mindful of how you use energy makes our community better. More information on how to make a difference at wattsmart.com.
Hello, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage pickup provider and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. Garbage and recycling containers should be placed at the curb before 7 a.m. on your scheduled collection day. Keep Summit County green. SummitCounty.org/recycle.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, concepts of sustainability, like we just spoke about. And now we're going to talk back to environmental issues. Earth Day.
That's right. We celebrated over the weekend.
And you did quite a few things at Swanner.
We did. We had kind of a little Earth Day open house or fair in partnership with a handful of other nonprofits.
Right.
The Clay Ecosystem Building with the Kimball Arts Center was a hit. The blender bike that Eats brought was a hit. That's, you know, self-powered.
Right. Hop on a bike, yep. And
and run the blender with your own power.
Make cricket flour from that.
Yeah,
if you
wanted. We should try that. There you go. Next time. A little less exciting than smoothies. But
well, here's what I found so interesting. I was there. I participated in the litter pickup.
Sponsored by Recycle Utah or run by.
Great job they did, Carolyn and Haley, and I helped out. And there was about 15 participants, most of them kids. Special shout out to a local
Girl
Scout
troop. You know,
there were
actually over 40 participants.
All right, well,
in
I wasn't
the trash
looking
pickup.
Then.
Yeah.
I was in my own
it
world.
It was kind of phased. People rolled in throughout. Yep.
So I went off with Carolyn Wara. She's the executive director of Recycle Utah, and we kind of went off on our own. And what we did was most of the kids and participants went into Swanner proper or around the edges.
Yeah.
Well, there's no shortage of stuff
around
up against
the
fence.
Along those trails.
The fence line. Okay.
Yeah.
No surprise. Well, Carolyn and I went up the street that leads into kind of like Main Street of that area. Center Drive or so. And we just kind of walked up and down the grass sidewalk areas and policed that. And what we found was pretty astounding. First of all, we estimated what was like an hour and a half of all those participants. We estimated that roughly 60 pounds of trash was collected in just 90 minutes by 40 some people, most of them kids, Girl Scout troops among them, et cetera. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Great work they did getting in there and getting their hands dirty and wet. They got very wet.
That's
they wore
right.
hip waders. They love wearing hip waders.
Yeah, there are a few locations where you have to really kind of get into a pond in order to get the trash that kind of blows in and flows in.
Yeah, and the majority of this trash, 55 pounds, 60 pounds, was plastic in nature. Some bottles, some cans, some, you know, objects or so. But most of it is plastics. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a lot of plastic.
Styrofoam.
And lots of styrofoam, too. And that's what Carolyn and I found in and around, say, the band shell and the plaza. But what's interesting is that it's not necessarily the candy wrapper we find. It's the tearaway part. So it's the part that's torn away. So people seem to have this attitude or idea that, well, I'm not going to throw the whole candy wrapper away, but I have no reservation in chucking the little edge that I tore off because why? Because that's so small. And I'm gonna make that.
Right.
I don't know what they're thinking. They need to stop thinking that because actually that's what could possibly be eaten.
Right.
By rabbits or squirrels particularly if it's got residue of food on it and it tastes good, so that's what next could be taken back as nesting material. You see bits of pieces of trash in nesting material, right? So anyway, that's what we found a lot, and we found hundreds and hundreds of that. We actually found at one point a whole pizza box in a tree. I am not kidding you.
How does that happen?
How does that? It got put there on purpose. That's how it happens. Yes. That, in that case. But lots of trash up and down the sidewalks and grass area, all the way up. We walked up to Starbucks area and then back. No shortage of cigarette butts. You know, I wish smokers, you know, would do their best to not treat the planet like it's some giant ashtray. Mm-hmm. And throw their cigarette butts.
I agree that so many of those tiny little things, you know, maybe an inch or smaller, they collect so quickly in what we see as well around the edge of the preserve, whether it's mint wrappers or a corner of a candy bar wrapper.
Right.
Or a cigarette butt. Or
so we talked about perhaps thinking that maybe people are being more mindful about not throwing large items, the bottles, the whole cans, the plastic glass bottles, plastic bottles. Maybe that's lessening and we're finally getting it in that sense. But now we still have to educate folks on the smaller items.
Yeah.
Like you say, those after dinner mints or something in the wrappers that are chucked.
Yep.
Toothpicks and the little plastic that every toothpick comes in now. That's what we're finding.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to give people the benefit of the doubt, I have to assume that often those are maybe shoved in a pocket where they fall out or set on a table where they're blown away or things like that. They're not
really
intentionally checked out the window.
That's nice of you. I don't.
So it's just about giving it that maybe extra
okay.
bit of attention.
So we found hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pieces of trash all around. And obviously it would be great, it would be interesting to go back this following Sunday, 1 week later, and patrol that same area I cleaned up, because we did a pretty good job getting everything, and see what's come back.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Do the delta of that.
Yeah.
What's the weekly accumulation of material and trash? And I will commit on air to trying to set up an ongoing program that helps, that I'll say on a monthly basis, we'll go there and we'll collect litter and trash. This is not a one-time.
Thank you.
You guys do that. I will work with you guys to do that because it means a lot. In fact, when I went home afterwards, it was all done. I went out and I policed the area around my neighborhood again in front of the Mark and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I picked up, you know, another 2 or 3 pounds. Again, mostly plastic-based material, wrappers and things like that. But it means something. You know, we think about, oh, the plastic patch and garbage patch out in the Pacific and marine life getting their guts and intestines stuck with plastic pounds. Well, that can happen here too. Mm-hmm. Animals here can consume that, and that can get in their stomachs and their guts and stuff, and that prohibits their digestive system. It's harmful. Let's cut it out. All right.
And there's something you can do right here. So
right here,
thank you
right
to
now.
The 40 people who came and picked up trash and volunteered in a variety of ways.
And special shout out to Girl Scout leader, my friend Jen, and her Girl Scouts, included her daughters Kate and Olivia, and their friend Aaron, and there were several others. They're fantastic.
Amazing.
Well done. All right. Let's take one last break, and then when we come back, we'll do a quick wrap-up and a reminder of the film. Again, at Park City Film Series Bugs, it's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, FredMarshallPainting.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
All right. We try our best. We don't want to name names of the actual businesses that we saw trash litter, but you know who you are, and cigarette butts. So let's wrap things up. We got a minute or two. Again, thanks to Katie Wang, Park City Film Series Film Executive Director, talking about the film Bugs documentary. Again, that's tomorrow night.
Yeah.
At the Santee.
Absolutely.
With some edibles.
Yeah. Yes.
That included.
There will be free chapul bars to try, and also admission is free. So bring the whole family.
That starts at
It starts at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
at the Santee Auditorium.
All right. And also thanks again to Bill Wilson, founder and CEO of Sustain 3. If you're interested in your business, you're interested in learning more about what he does, you can go to his website or email him at bwilson@sustain3.com. And anything else we got?
We want to thank our underwriters and our sponsors.
Of course. They include, Recycle Utah, who, again, did a great job in overseeing the litter
huge
collection.
Shout out. And not just the collection, most importantly, the sorting. And then Recycle Utah took all of the recyclables back with them to process. So a huge thank you from the
Swanner
team.
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned
that
because
Utah folks. Yeah.
All this 50, 60 pounds, roughly 15, 20 pounds of it was recyclable. Mm-hmm. So they sorted that stuff. Thanks, Haley, Carolyn, for all the work you do. And of course, also thanks to our sponsors, Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain.
And most importantly, listeners like you. We're always interested in getting your thoughts and ideas for shows or guests. You can email us your thoughts and those ideas to for future shows to thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
This is KPCW 91.7 FM Park City. Remember, we've got your Wasatch back.
Thanks again. And NPR News is coming up in about 10 seconds.
Countdown time.